to the brightness of your dawn.
So one day you're walking along outside, and in the distance you see this beautiful flower. It's arrayed with a color and contours and a pop that are unique. And you want to take a closer look, so you move toward it. You are drawn into its beauty. A lady walks into a local Starbucks, and she sees a group of four men sitting down together at the table. One of them is speaking. He speaks with poise, gentleness, respect, and the others are all listening very intently to what he's saying. She becomes curious and moves closer to the table so she can hear what they're saying. She too is drawn in. A nut brown squirrel one day goes nuts when he catches a whiff of Jeff peanut butter that's been left on a picnic table. Seeing no picnickers around, it nimbly makes his move. The squirrel is drawn in. A four-year-old boy watches four back-to-back episodes of Superman and is filled with wonder, and he's filled with the desire to fly. And so he goes into his mother's closet. He grabs her best red towel, ties it around his neck, goes into the living room, stands on the living room table, stretches out his arms, and leaps off, doing a swan dive, and lands on the ground with a thud. He, too, is drawn in. We live in a world of gravity, where we are drawn into certain things rather irresistibly, certain things that appear to have a gravitational force to beauty, to charisma, or in the case of the four-year-old boy, to the ground. We are drawn in. And it's very interesting that in our text for today that was just read by Liz, the one from Matthew 2, that the Magi too are, as it were, irresistibly drawn in. Drawn in to the baby born King of the Jews. Apparently this child too has a gravitational force all of his own. He pulls things in to himself, and it is a powerful force. Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews, they ask. We saw his star in the east, and we've come to worship him. The Magi are drawn in, irresistibly drawn in. They discover that the child isn't actually in Jerusalem, but in Bethlehem, as they are told. And as they're making their way to Bethlehem, journeying there, they see something utterly remarkable. It is not only them who are drawn in to this child in the manger. It is the entire creation itself, apparently, as represented in the star. The star that they had seen before in the east, they now see again, and it's going out ahead of them to Bethlehem. It's not leading them because they already know where they're going. Apparently, the star itself is being drawn in. And as Matthew puts so delicately but beautifully, and when the star got there, it stopped overhead. Yes, to offer its worship, just as the Magi themselves do. Things being drawn in to worship the Christ child. And brothers and sisters and friends, it's still happening today all around the world in all sorts of places to all kinds of people. People are being drawn in to the one who was born in a manger and who now sits at the right hand of the Father in heaven. They're being drawn in. All sorts of people, people you wouldn't expect. People who might consider themselves unworthy. People filled with shame. People who have done unspeakable things. People like you. People like me. People like Anne Lamott. Anne writes about her own experience of being drawn into Jesus in a book titled Traveling Mercies. It's kind of a memoir or an autobiographical work. And it's quite a story, and it goes like this. Besides beer and wine, in 1980 or so, Anne was regularly drinking, she says, about 16 ounces of scotch a night, secretly so that no one would know. She was periodically getting high on cocaine and meeting with married men at X-rated motels, and she was becoming more and more suicidal. As she writes, quote, "I was cracking. And then one afternoon in my dark bedroom, the cracks webbed all the way through me. I believed that I would soon die from a fall or an overdose. I knew there was an afterlife, but felt that the odds of my living long enough to get to heaven were almost nil. They couldn't possibly take you in the shape I was in. I could no longer imagine how God could love me." But then she says, out of nowhere, she calls up this new pastor who is pastoring a new church down the road. A church, she says, that looked rather pathetic. It looked like a PG&E station. She called this pastor. They talked about Jesus. And she says she felt like she wanted to fall on her knees, newly born. But she didn't. Instead, she walked back home and got out the scotch. As she says, it would be 4 more years before I got sober. I was not willing to give up a life of shame and failure without a fight. And fight she did as long as she could until April of 1984. It was April 1984 when, in the midst of getting loaded with booze and cocaine every single night, taking speed during the day, chain smoking all the time at the age of 30, that Anne did some stuff that brought her to an all-time low. She had never felt so bad. She had never felt such shame and disgust with herself. And so to cope, she drank Bushmills and popped cocaine for 6 days and 6 nights straight. And then on the seventh night, something happened. She says, and I quote, "On the seventh night, though very drunk and just about to take a sleeping pill, I discovered that my body was falling apart and I was in a bad way. I thought I should call a doctor or my friend Pammy, but was so disgusted with myself that I just couldn't wake someone up at that hour and ask for help. Several hours later, my condition improved a little, and I was able to get into bed. I was shaky and sad and too wild to have another drink or take a sleeping pill, and so I simply had a cigarette and turned off the light. After a while, as I lay there, I became aware of someone with me, hunkered down in the corner. And I just assumed it was my deceased father, whose presence I'd felt over the years when I was afraid and alone. The feeling was so strong that I actually turned on the light for a moment to make sure there was no one there, which of course there wasn't. But after a while, in the dark again, I knew beyond any doubt that it was Jesus. I felt him as surely as I feel my dog nearby as I write this. And I was appalled. Appalled. I thought about my life and my brilliant progressive friends. I thought about what everyone would think if I became a Christian. And it seemed utterly impossible, an utterly impossible thing that I simply could not allow to happen. I turned to the wall and said out loud, "I would rather die." I felt him just sitting there on his haunches in the corner of my sleeping loft, watching me with patience and love, and I squinched my eyes shut, but that didn't help, because that's not what I was seeing him with. Finally, I fell asleep, and in the morning, he was gone. And then she continues, "This experience spooked me badly, but I thought it was just an apparition born of fear and self-loathing and booze and bodily weakness. But then everywhere I went, I had the feeling that a little cat was following me, wanting me to reach down and pick it up, wanting me to open the door and let it in. But I knew what would happen. You let a cat in one time, give it a little milk, and then it stays forever. So I tried to keep one step ahead of it, slamming the houseboat door whenever I entered and left." But then she says, a week later, as she was walking along the road, she found herself drawn in, walking into this rickety little church, again, a pathetic little church, where a worship service was going on. And after she sat down and listened to a sermon that she says sounded like listening to someone that was trying to convince her of extraterrestrials, something happened, something out of her control. The congregation started singing songs, and the more they sang, the more she was being completely overwhelmed, drawn in. She describes it this way. The last song was so deep and raw and pure that I could not escape. It was as if the people were singing between the notes, weeping and joyful at the same time. And I felt like their voices or something was rocking me in its bosom, holding me like a scared kid. And I opened up to that feeling, and it washed over me. I began to cry and left before the benediction, and I raced home and felt that little cat running along at my heels. And I walked down the dock past dozens of potted flowers under a sky as blue as one of God's own dreams. And I opened the door to my houseboat, and I stood there a minute. And then I hung my head and said, "Forget it." I quit. I took a long, deep breath and said out loud, "All right, you can come in." The Magi, the Star, and Lamont, drawn in to the Christ child, to Jesus. I suppose it just leaves us with one question this morning. It leaves you with one question this morning. What drew you here today? Or perhaps I should say, who?